girl, come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining her do.
Come over here, kid, will you, sir? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic. Then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You got to do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour. It's Michelle and Jordan. How are you doing this evening? Hope you've had a nice weekend. Love these gray, foggy days. Hear a lot of people complaining, but I think that they're really, really beautiful. And that's sort of what we're going to be talking about today, how beautiful the landscape is and how important it is in so many ways, especially to the things that we love to eat and drink in this wonderful place we live. When you think about terroir, that wonderful French word that speaks of the taste of place. You can't separate the farm from the rest of the environment. You can't separate the vineyard from everything that surrounds it. So when you have a tomato, I'm like, oh, that tomato tastes so good. I want another one that tastes like it. And then you taste that same variety of tomato from another place, another spot in the county even, and it doesn't taste the same. It's that specific land, that specific place and time that we talk about when we talk about terroir. And so whenever you think about food and wine and why things are like they are, why Russian River Pinot Noir is so good, why it's such a great place, you have to think of all of the things that make that environment. From the fog, which comes from the coast, from that beautiful stretch, and we're going to find out soon how long it is because I confess I don't know, known as Laguna de Santa Rosa, one of my favorite places in the county. The egrets that you see there at times, the occasional blue heron, the way that it makes that big curve over by the bridge near Occidental Road, and if there's been a really good rain followed by a clear night and a full moon, the way that full moon glances off the water, it's just one of the most spectacular parts of Sonoma County and all of Northern California, I think. We're really defined by it. And it always gives me great comfort to know that there are people that are working to protect it and keep it vibrant and healthy, and the same with our coast. And it is with that thought that I want to introduce our guest, David Bannister, Executive Director of the Laguna de Santa Rosa Foundation. Welcome to Mouthful.
Thank you. Hi, Michelle.
And my very good friend, Una Glass, Executive Director of California Coast Walk.
Well, it's great to be here, Michelle. Thank
and
you.
California Coast Walk is actually a host statewide. It's a statewide program.
We are a statewide organization, yes.
But you're based in Sebastopol.
We're based in Sebastopol.
Lucky for
and
us.
And we started in Sonoma County.
And Laguna de Santa Rosa is also based in Sebastopol, the offices.
Well, the offices are, we moved into the new location out on Occidental Road, and that is actually in Santa Rosa.
Is that Santa Rosa? That's Sanford, right?
Yes.
That's right. I always forget that it feels like Sebastopol.
Yeah. It's closer to Sebastopol than it is Santa Rosa, but it's actually City of Santa Rosa property.
Okay. Let's start with you, David, and Laguna de Santa Rosa. If you would define what the foundation does.
Sure. We're a nonprofit group that's dedicated to the preservation, restoration, and education of the public about the Laguna de Santa Rosa complex. And so we do, we have three program areas, education, restoration, and scientific research.
And the Laguna itself, How much land, or if that's the right way, what does it encompass?
Yeah, well, it is, the Laguna proper is a 14-mile-long body of water that stretches from Cotati to where it empties into the Russian River out near where Mark West Creek also drains into the Laguna, but up about near River Road where the Laguna empties in, although Windsor Creek also empties into the Laguna de Santa Rosa. So if you include that, it's 20 miles between Windsor and Cotati. And all the water that falls anywhere in that area and from the top of the Mayacamas Mountains drains into the Laguna. So that's 250 square miles.
And when you say restoration, how has it been compromised over the years?
Yeah, human activities have definitely had an impact on the Laguna in the last 100, 150 years in a number of different ways. Riparian forests have been cut, so the protection of the trees and that habitat that should have lined the Laguna for as much as a quarter mile on either side has been severely reduced. And that's one of the things that we're looking to restore. But also pollution has impacted the water quality there. The Laguna is listed as impaired for three different things: dissolved oxygen, nutrients, and temperature. So water pollution has definitely been an impact. And various different other human activities, agriculture and the like, have taken land out of habitat and turned it into various different, you know, houses or whatever, but that's all been lost habitat out there in the Laguna. So there's been a number of different impacts. It's still an incredibly rich, biological, diverse area, but it used to be much more than it is now, so we're trying to restore some of those values.
Mm-hmm. Now, are you getting some of them? Do you get any land back when you're doing this sort of restoration process, or do you have to just work with what there is now?
Well, occasionally. For example, the Boleto Winery donated a conservation easement to the Open Space District along the east bank of the Laguna between Occidental Road and Highway 12. And we've been working in that area for several years doing restoration, which in that area means removing invasive species and planting trees and other understory plants. Uh-huh. So we're trying to restore that riparian forest that I just mentioned had been taken out, basically.
Uh-huh. So you do sometimes get, say, conservation easements is how you get the land back.
That, and we also, there's a fair bit of city property, City of Sebastopol and City of Santa Rosa property that's owned out there, and they love us to do restoration work on their properties, and so that's another area where you have a willing landowner that's interested in doing restoration on their property. We will be glad to be involved.
I want to bring Una in now, too. Tell us about California Coast Walk.
Actually, well, first of all, it's actually Coast Walk, California.
Coast Walk. I didn't know that.
And we are another nonprofit 501c3 organization, and we're the only statewide organization committed to completing the California Coastal Trail. So that is, a lot of our mission is involved with completing the California Coastal Trail, which is a trail that will run from Oregon to Mexico. It's about 1,200 miles long. It's currently about 63% complete. The other thing we do is we advocate for public access to the coastline that has been guaranteed by the California Coastal Act. There is a guarantee that the people of California have access to the coastline. And we work with the Coastal Commission and other groups to make sure that these access points are maintained and that the public can get to the beaches and the tidelands that they're entitled to.
So does that mean that there can be, from the Oregon border to Mexico, Mexican border, there can be no private ownership of the coast?
Actually, yes. Within the high tide range down to low tide, that area is public land, and no one is allowed to own that privately. It is public property. It's part of the commons.
Uh-huh. Great. Cool. It's like that in Hawaii, too, I think. Everyone has to have access to all beaches.
Right, and that's unusual because in a lot of states, the coastline has been completely walled off. You can go to a lot of places on the East Coast, and you can drive for 50 miles and find no way to get to the beach. And that actually has not happened in California thanks to Prop 20, the California Coastal Act.
When was that passed?
That was passed in 70. Oh, you would ask me that.
I think it was 72. Sometime in the 70s. So sometime
in the early 70s.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Cool. And what about some of the education programs you do? I know that you do things to get people out onto the trails.
Right. Now, the other thing we do, of course, is we advocate for the coastal environment and coastal preservation. And we think that the best way for people to be engaged and bought into maintaining and restoring our coastline is for them to get out to the coastline. So one of the things we do are what are called coast walks, which are multi-day camping adventures along the California Coastal Trail. And most of those, most of our coast walks are educational in nature. Many of them are led by volunteers who have a background in biology, geology, ecosystems, et cetera. And they're all up and down the state. We have them in Santa Barbara and Sonoma and Humboldt and San Francisco and Los Angeles, Catalina Island.
Really?
Yeah. Yep. We have one also coming up this year on Santa Cruz Island, which is a very wild island.
Oh, I'll go to those two. Yes, I haven't been on Catalina Island since I was 9, and I would love to go back. And I've never been on Santa Cruz Island, and I would love to see it.
It's one of our more rugged adventures. It's a true backpack, and you have to carry your food in. A lot of our coast walks are a little more luxurious. We call it backpacking without the pack. So you get to enjoy the hike while somebody else carries your gear. So
sounds good to me.
Yeah. So you go on a multi-day hike, and you start at one spot, and our volunteers carry your major gear from one point, from one campground to the next. Mm-hmm. And then we, when you arrive at your campsite, our volunteers cook you dinner, and you have a happy hour by the campfire. It's pretty luxurious.
That sounds great. I want to talk in more detail about your programs and also the programs of the Laguna, as well as the new field guide to the Laguna. But before we do that, it's one of the reasons I wanted to have the two of you together. California budget. Mm. It seems like a big, fat mess.
Zero?
Yeah. And I always wonder, was like, well, how are things that can't be repaired very well going to be hurt? You know, are there organizations that are going to lose things and then something will just be gone? So how are you two doing in the budget crisis? Are you okay?
Well, it's interesting. We were just talking before we went on air that both of us had received grants from the California Coastal Conservancy in 2008. And that money has, well, in her case, I guess she got some of it.
I got some of it, but it was frozen up until June 1st. And then I got a fraction of what we had been originally allocated.
And we haven't seen any of it yet.
You haven't seen any of it.
Yeah. So that's been a big impact. And and that's just on one grant. There's lots of different other agencies that also fund the kind of work we do for restoration and other things. And that money has become much harder to come by.
Uh-huh. And is that like most of your operating budget comes from those sorts of sources?
A significant chunk of ours.
Yeah, really a significant chunk of ours as well. And I think you've probably heard something about just the past day or two that the governor has unveiled his new budget. And this could have a really big impact on Coastwalk's ability to do things because he once again, well, actually, he completely took funding for state parks out of the budget. It's zero. and he's tying the funding to a tax that would go on future legislation that may or may not pass, and that legislation is to allow new offshore oil drilling. So he's tied parks to oil drilling.
I thought the coast was protected from oil drilling.
No, it's actually very much in jeopardy right now.
Oh.
Sonoma Coast or?
Sonoma Coast.
Sonoma Coast.
Sonoma Coast, yes. And in fact, an interesting thing or a very important thing to know about is that Lynn Woolsey has a bill in Congress right now that's her marine sanctuary bill where she is trying to get a marine sanctuary that is by San Francisco and Marin County extended up through Sonoma County all the way up to Point Arena. And if that bill passes, then that area would be protected from offshore oil drilling. But right now, we are actually very much at risk of the possibility of oil drilling. But that's actually on the federal level. On the state mm-hmm. level, the deal that is my understanding, and I don't know all the details on this, but my understanding is the area most at risk actually is around the Santa Barbara area, and they're looking at reopening some drilling around that area, and that would be in exchange that or the taxation on that drilling or somehow the revenue from that drilling would be funding state parks. But in the budget right now, in the California, the just released budget, there's no money for state parks. I believe the State Parks Foundation just put out a press release about this, saying this was a pretty unacceptable situation.
I'm astonished by that. I've been sick for a couple of days, so I haven't been completely up on things, and it makes me want to go back to bed. Gosh, how about a little music on that note? It's Mouthful. It's Michelle Jordan. It is KRCB. We are talking about the Laguna de Santa Rosa and Coast Walk, California. My guests, Una Glass and David Bannister. And that was just a really depressing news about the budget. So we'll say a little bit more about the political side of things and give you some things that you can do and that maybe people to contact, things you should know towards the end of the show. So as usual, have your pencils and paper ready. We'll have websites for both of these organizations as well. But let's talk now. And, you know, we don't have to go just Laguna, just Coast Walk. We can just mix it all up. I want to talk about different ways people get involved. And just in general, tell us more about the Laguna, the field guide, the tree planting, when the first Coast Walk is, just the whole thing.
Go for it.
Okay. Well, yesterday we did an exciting project with over 100 volunteers came out and planted about 750 oak, valley oak, and other species at the Sebastopol's Meadowlark Field next to the Chevron station on Highway 12. We actually had 100 trees planted by youth groups in the weeks leading up to yesterday, and then yesterday over 100 people came out and planted the rest. And that's what we talked about earlier, a restoration effort to restore a mm-hmm. riparian forest that used to be in that what's now an open field. And that is part of the Middle Reach Restoration Project that I mentioned earlier that we have been working on for several years, but on the east slope of the Laguna between Highway 12 and Occidental Road. Mm-hmm. So we have lots of opportunities for volunteers to join in the organization. We have docents that lead our education classes. They go into the schools and do a wetland education segment in the classroom, and then those same kids come out and do a field trip into the Laguna. Many of them would have never been out in nature before at all, even.
Yeah.
So they learn about the Laguna and wetlands on site, and those docents are all volunteers as well. We do a docent education program every year. That's coming up, so we're looking for volunteers who are interested in becoming docents. Yeah, and then they will get an intense training for, I think it's 8 weeks, and become then next fall go into those classrooms and do that education of kids. We also have public outings in the Laguna. We're doing a series in conjunction with Land Paths this spring. So there's quite a few different ways that people can link into the organization. We probably get five times as much work done as because we have so many dedicated volunteers uh-huh. as we would if we had, you know, just based on our budget size.
Sure. When you were out there planting trees, a couple of questions. What's the water level like there right now?
It's fairly low right now. Uh-huh. That was a little dicey when we planned this event yeah. for January 9th. You never know what the water, but yeah. because we've had a fairly dry year so far this mm-hmm. year, it was a little muddy. The volunteers all got some mm-hmm. mud on their boots, but other than that, it was quite fine. Yeah, the Laguna has not really flooded, or if it did, it was only stayed that way sort of for a couple of days yeah. after a rain in December, but at this point, the ground is muddy but quite usable.
And what sort of animals are you seeing out there this time of year? Animals including birds.
Well, the lagoon is home to a couple of hundred species of birds, and this is a good time of year because the migratory species are out there. Well, the other morning we had a false alarm at our office. I was there at 5:30 in the morning on our security system, and I saw a fox scampering up the road right in front of me. So, you never know what you're going to see. We're always seeing lots of birds, and we'll see even more when there's some flooding and I get out there in a kayak.
Yeah. Oh, that must be amazing. I know sometimes the flocks of egrets. I guess it's the great egret. Is it the great egret?
There is a heron rookery that you can get to from the water down at Delta Pond, which is down around where Santa Rosa Creek comes into the laguna. And there you'll find nesting great egrets, snowy egrets, and great blue herons. And so you'll see big numbers of them.
And you see them nesting there. That's exciting.
Yeah, yeah. It's much like Audubon Canyon Ranch, if you've ever done that on the Marin Coast. There's that many birds there.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, since they're nesting there, they're out in the area all
sure.
day long
yeah.
foraging. So we see them kind of wherever you go. But there's also nesting bald eagles out there that I almost always see when I go kayaking. You'll see river otters. It's very rich area.
Mm-hmm. What's the best time of year to go out there?
Well, as I said, I like to kayak, and you know that requires some higher water levels.
Yeah.
In part because there's an invasive plant out there called Ludwigia that chokes the main channel.
Yeah, that's been in the news a lot, right? There was a lot gotten rid of, but it's.
We did a major program a few years ago to remove it, and it's back.
It is
because it need in order to. It's always going to be there. It needs to be regularly beaten down. Mm-hmm. But there was a lot of concern at the time about West Nile virus, so there was a lot of public focus on getting rid of the Ludwigia because of the mosquito problem. Once we did that, then the funding from the various different government entities that funded that project in the first place, that sort of scare went away, so did the money. And so the plant is back, and it's very difficult to plant, but we know more about it now. There's new science about it, and so we're hoping to again try and attack it one of these days. But it is a major problem. A South American species that somehow got into the laguna and is now a real problem, both from a lot of different standpoints.
What's it look like?
Ecological. It looks like a floating water plant, like a seaweed or something.
Uh-huh.
It has yellow flowers when it's blooming in the summer. You'll note it by that. But it's attached to the bank, you know, in the mud, and so what you see floating is actually just the top leaves. It goes all the way to the ground, and at times of the year you cannot get a kayak through it. I mean, even though there's water there underneath it, you know, it has formed such a mat that it is impenetrable.
It sounds almost like kudzu in the south.
A little bit like that, yeah.
Yeah.
A monster plant.
Yeah. Wow. Well, it sounds like now is a good time if there's
now
another
is a
rain.
Good time to get now, out
can,
there.
And can people, is it open access?
So access is an issue. There is a place to put in a kayak on the Occidental Road Bridge that you mentioned earlier. Yeah, there's a place that's fishing game property there where you can pull out. There's a gravel place you can pull out and get your kayak in from there. But the Open Space District is going to be constructing a trail between Highway 12 and Occidental Road. And that'll be a new opportunity for people to get out and witness the laguna and learn more about it. That trail is supposed to be constructed this year, 2010. Uh-huh. So that will offer new opportunities.
Mm-hmm. How does the laguna affect the surrounding environment? What is its key importance and key effect on the farmland, the vineyards, the general environment?
Yeah, well, everything's connected. You know, you say, how does the laguna affect them, and then the other question is, how do they affect the laguna?
Sure.
And it's not always easy to say that, but human activities, if there's fertilizer going on the land, that then other types of agriculture going on, and then those nutrients end up washing into the laguna when it rains, then that's having a negative impact on the water quality in the laguna. and also serving as a fertilizer for that invasive plant that we just mentioned. Mm-hmm. But the biological diversity of the Laguna also has a beneficial impact for humans and other landscapes, mm-hmm. Because salmon and steelhead migrate through the Laguna to get up to Mark West Creek, to get up to Santa Rosa Creek. That's delivering nutrients back into the land, and they need to be able to get through it. Again, that invasive plant can make that difficult, we think, for those anadromous fish to migrate back upstream and downstream. So it's in nature, everything is interconnected, and so there's all kinds of impacts when you start looking at them.
Is it one of the things, I'm probably showing my ignorance here, but that's okay. How does the Laguna affect the temperature and the climate? I mean, I always think of it as something that contributes to the mild climate and helps keep us moist and cool, but, you know, maybe I'm a romantic.
I don't know that there's been a lot of studies done on that, so I'm not sure I could answer that. But where I thought you were going with that question was climate change and what the Laguna ecosystem services that we like to call, how we need to be aware of what climate change is doing to the environment and adapt to those changes. So one of the, for example, that tree planting yesterday, those trees will be soaking up carbon and helping to mitigate climate change. So that we're doing something to mitigate climate change. But we also think we need to be aware that climate change is happening no matter what happens on the mitigation side. It's going to continue to happen. The system is loaded for decades worth of climate change based on the carbon that's already in the air. And those animals are going to need to migrate to more hospitable areas. And the kind of thing we did yesterday creates a migration corridor that those animals can use to get from one area to another. They want to move to what the scientists tell us is that animals and even plant species are going to naturally try and migrate to cooler areas, higher elevations, which is what they're used to. Uh-huh. So if that we need to supply them with that habitat to allow them to get from one to the other to facilitate that. So we think restoring riparian forests, for example, is a way of allowing the nature to adapt to the climate change that's going to be coming our way. So I don't think I answered your question.
No, it doesn't matter. This is public radio. You can see. You don't have to answer my question. No, that's really interesting.
I can be like a politician. I can just change the question and answer what I want.
People do it all the time. That's really interesting. I hadn't thought about that, but it makes a lot of sense.
And there's other adaptations that nature is going to need to make, and we as managers of the land, if you will, need to think that way. Are those valley oaks that we planted yesterday necessarily going to be the species that's going to survive in that long term? I mean, maybe there's a different species if we're going to warm up a couple of degrees that would be better adapted. We don't know that, of course, but it's a question to ask and to do some scientific research about and keep our eyes on.
Now, is that something that factors into Coastwalk?
Not really, but I had a comment to make about
it. You go ahead.
About the planting of the trees is so great because part of the as those trees grow up and they produce a canopy over the Laguna, that is helps to mitigate the Lidwigia to some degree, I think, because it's it and the growing of algae blooms because the water stays cooler when it has
the shade.
Yeah, absolutely. That's another benefit of those riparian forests is keeping that water cooler. And I mentioned that the Laguna has been listed as impaired for water temperature. So to the extent we can replant that riparian forest that used to exist there, that's one of the things we can do to address that problem.
And I think that the Laguna also has a really big impact on the quality of the river, the Russian River's water. And that whole floodplain has a role in slowing down the water as it rushes down to the ocean so that it prevents erosion, the more we have the Laguna functioning as it should.
And flooding. We call this ecosystem services, and a lot of people aren't familiar with the term, but that's an ecosystem service that the Laguna provides. If that water wasn't stored in the Laguna during major storm events, Guerneville would be flooding all the time,
yes.
Not just sometimes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, before we move on to the coast, talk about the field guide. Field Guide to the Laguna de Senora. So this has just come out a couple months ago, right?
That's correct. It is a project of ours, and we received support funding from the Sebastopol Rotary Club and the City of Santa Rosa. And it is a really nice little field guide to the plants and animals in the Laguna. There's a nice section at the front that talks about the ecology and natural history of the Laguna. And then as you get into the field guide section, there's a picture of each animal or plant and a description of it, a discussion of whether it's a native or non-native, what habitat it likes, and so on. So this book has been flying off the shelves, actually, during the Christmas season at both Copperfields in Santa Rosa and Sebastopol, and also Wild Birds Unlimited in
As
Santa Rosa.
Should. This is fascinating. American badger, bobcat, coyote, gray fox, long-tailed weasel, mountain lion, river otter, black-tailed deer, black-tailed jackrabbit, meadow vole, and muskrat.
All of them out there.
Wow.
I wish I could tell you I'd seen all of them, but I haven't, but I've seen a number of those.
I wouldn't have listed all those. Many, many types of duck, gulls and shorebirds. I'm looking real quickly, maybe... I'll just ask you, are there ravens out there? They're probably not.
Ravens?
Yeah.
Sure.
There are ravens there?
Yeah.
I'm fascinated with ravens right now.
Yeah.
This looks like a fabulous book. It's reptiles. A couple types of snake. I'd like to borrow some of your gopher snakes, please.
Yeah, right.
Lizards, turtles. Oh, this is just great. This is a great book. And what's the cost?
I think they're selling it at $13 at Copperfields.
So you can pick this up at Wild Birds Unlimited at Copperfields.
That's correct. Those
are
the
two main locations.
Yeah, the three locations, right? Both Copperfields, Santa Rosa, and Sebastopol.
Oh, okay, great.
And then Wild Birds Unlimited. And you know, I might also mention, since we're on that topic, that there's a number of endangered species in the Laguna.
Mm-hmm.
The seasonal wetland that we call vernal pools has, mm-hmm. of course, two listed species of plants. And... So it's important that we preserve that habitat.
Mm-hmm.
And California tiger salamander live in those vernal pools as well.
Uh-huh.
He is vernal pools.
Meadow foam?
Sebastopol meadow foam is one of the endangered species.
Uh-huh.
Burke's goldfields, I believe, is the other one. And of course, the animals, the CTS, California tiger salamander.
Yeah. Okay, now the coast. The coast, I think the impact on the environment on a day-to-day basis is more obvious with the coast, especially if you're here. It's one of the reasons I'm here. 9 miles from the coast, I think, as the crow or the raven flies. I like the fog. I like the scent of sea air.
Me too. I moved here
really
from Kansas. There was there weren't very many coasts there.
No, I can't imagine living far from the Pacific coast, frankly. The East Coast
I've
is different.
Lived close to the Pacific coast almost all my life, since I was 3 and a half.
On the coast trails, the coast walk, can we talk at all about what creatures you might encounter different times of year? I know that there's a herd of, is it elk up in the Westport area?
You definitely run into elk, particularly in the Lost Coast area, which is up around Humboldt towards Del Norte. Big herds I've heard. I've never seen them myself.
I saw this was years ago. This was probably in the early to mid 80s. There was a herd that I think might have been relocated up near Westport.
Uh-huh.
And we'd see them every morning. There they were.
I think I saw them when I did the hike with my daughter at the Humboldt County hike. I think they're Roosevelt elk.
Oh,
I think is the species.
Yeah, there's bobcat, there's mountain lions, just about every kind of sea and shorebird you can think of.
Mm-hmm.
The diversity is so incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, from the trail you can see the whales. But, you know, the funny thing about the California Coastal Trail is we're just thinking of it as, in its natural manifestation, which we people in Northern California think of the Coastal Trail as elk and wild animals, whereas actually the Coastal Trail also includes the Venice Boardwalk, and one has been known to see rollerbladers out there.
Yeah, a hike there, I guess, would be really different.
Yes. So it includes, you know, Torrey Pines in San Diego, the Gaviota Coast by Santa Barbara, and San Luis Obispo counties. There's a pretty wild area there, but there it's also very urban in some places.
Now, what about the stretch, say, from Monterey to south of Big Sur, that whole Big Sur, Monterey, Carmel area? What that is that part like? Is that part of the trail finished yet?
No. There's segments, and that's a lot of what we are doing at Coastwalk is, in fact, the grant that we have from the Coastal Conservancy right now is our project is to locate existing segments of Coastal Trail, because a lot of local jurisdictions will build a short little piece of trail. For example, the trail down by Doran Beach is part of the Coastal Trail. And oftentimes a local jurisdiction will give it its own local name, like, you know, the George Smith Trail or something. And the local people are so happy to have their trail, which is great, but they don't understand that it's actually part of a whole statewide trail system.
Yeah.
And so our job is to go to local jurisdictions and say, hi, did you realize that local trail that you have is actually part of the statewide system? And we can help you get connected to the entire California Coastal Trail. And as we work to designate more and more existing segments, then we locate the missing links. And by knowing where the missing links are, we get individual jurisdictions interested in completing those links. Like we work with land trusts or other jurisdictions or state parks or regional parks to try and complete segments that are missing. Some of them are, sometimes we're working with port authorities. It's kind of interesting. But that's a lot of the work that we're doing, is locating the gaps in the Coastal Trail so that we can get it completed.
Interesting. Now, once you do that, is it possible to walk? Would it be possible to walk from Oregon to Mexico?
Well, we've had two through, we call them through hikes from Oregon to Mexico. The last one was in 2003. And we had a band of people go all the way from, do the entire hike. And we're hoping to do another one probably sometime in the next 3 years. And we also get people, I get emails all the time from individuals who are hiking the entire Coastal Trail by themselves, like, you know, a couple of backpackers. Usually they're students, and they're asking for, where can I find a hostel? Is it okay to camp here? You know, what happens when I get to San Pedro? Things like that. But there are through hikers that are actually walking the whole trail now. Part of where you're walking, however, is on the side of a road.
Yeah. How long does it take? I mean, generally. I know you can't say exactly.
Several months.
Several months, okay.
Yeah.
I would have thought that.
Yes. Some people are very ambitious.
Yeah, in a very specific way. And have a lot of freedom, too.
Yeah.
That would be a remarkable thing, to be able to have the opportunity to do that.
Well, I think it's a great way to see California, because you see the diversity that is California. I'm really struck, since I've been the executive director at Coastwalk, because I travel a fair amount between the different sections of the state, in how diverse the coastline is. So, you know, you can look at Humboldt County and there's this beautiful forested area and wild animals, and a lot of those areas don't even have any roads going in. And you see waterfalls and fern gardens and just amazing things. And then I can go to someplace like Torrey Pines in San Diego, where it's very, the vegetation is very, very different, even though that area is also wild. It's not built on right there at Torrey Pines. But the soil is so different, the plants are so different, and you know, you go to Pismo Beach or around the San Luis Obispo coastline, the vegetation there is very, very different than it is up in Del Norte. So it's such a great way to see the entire state, and you get such an idea of the variety.
Yeah, it's, you know, California is so magnificent geographically and geologically.
And it is. And, you know, when I first took this job, I didn't quite get the whole how diverse the coastline was until I started going to these different mm-hmm. areas. And then I didn't quite get how diverse the concept of the trail was, because it is such a, you know, a true wild backpacking trail where you get a very, very remote experience in some places. And then in areas like Los Angeles, it's actually part of the transportation system down there. So I'm thinking about transportation as well as hiking. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
So some places, and it's got multiple uses. In the wild areas, we're very happy to have it as a hiker's trail. Mm-hmm. But in places like Orange County, people can be riding their bicycles to work along the trail.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the critical things about making an entire through trail without gaps in it is, well, try and imagine, for example, Highway 101, if it stopped after each town. You know, how would people really utilize it effectively? Well, that's the concept of mm-hmm. an entire coastal trail.
Will it be identified once you have that?
Yes.
With like nice, discreet little signs that let you know, I kept going the right way?
Well, that's actually part of our grant is we're putting up the official insignia of the California Coastal Trail, that signage along existing segments. And when we put that signage up, then the Coastal Commission records that segment as being an official part of the Coastal Trail.
Oh, cool. We're going to take one more little musical break here and be right back with a little bit more talk with our guests here on Mouthful.
Over the mountain, across the sea, there's a girl waiting for me. Cross all the river, beyond every cloud, she's past the wind, blowing loud.
It's Mouthful. I am here with Una Glass and David Bannister of David of the Laguna de Santa Rosa Foundation, Una of Coastwalk, California. We've got just about 7 or 8 more minutes. So a couple of things. For somebody who wants to get involved with Coastwalk, tell me your website.
We have two websites.
Oh, two.
We have one that's called coastwalk.org.
Coastwalk.org. That's
pretty easy.
Then
we have another one that's called californiacoastaltrail.info.
CaliforniaCoastalTrail.info.
Correct.
And you know, you shouldn't, if you're not real adept at navigating, you shouldn't be typing in www anymore into your browsers.
Yes.
They don't, that messes them up. So CaliforniaCoastalTrail.info.
Yes. And that trail is, that website is actually, I'm really stuck on trails here, is very information-rich website for people that are hikers or people who want to use the trail. And we have maps of the entire coastal trail going all the way from Oregon to Mexico. So there's section maps. I think we've got 17 different maps just in Sonoma County alone. So you can click on a little icon of the state, and then you can kind of zoom in on your part of mm-hmm. where you want to go. And so you can see a map of the area of coastal trail that you want to be hiking on. But in addition to that, we have photographs and we have trail notes and we have information about what you might want to do on a hike in that area. And we're actually, now speaking of volunteers.
That was going to be my next question.
We're really wanting volunteers to help us up and down the state populate this website more. The whole notion behind this website is for people who hike their little section of trail to be able to send us information, and we can post it onto that website so that you can see, you might not want to go on a hike on that section of the trail in the in Malibu, the Malibu Preserve up there, because part of it was washed out. You know, we want to have that kind of information on there. So we're working on that. We've actually mapped the entire California Coastal Trail all the way from Oregon to Mexico, and we have it in something called ArcGIS, which is a very high-end mapping software. And that's what we use to generate all these maps. Well, we're now in the process of converting our entire thing to Google Earth. So we have at least the San Diego segment completed, and it's one of the projects we're working on. You'll be able to go to our website and zoom in on the coastal trail and be able to see the trail alignment along with anything like beach access points, restrooms, parking lots, the kinds of amenities that you would want to know about if you were going to go on a hike. So that's one of the major projects that we're working on and seeking actually additional funding for right now. But the working with volunteers to help us populate this website is something that we are very excited about doing.
What about the overnights, the multi-day camping? Where do people get information about that? On the main website?
Yes, on coastwalk.org. And we are just in the process of putting up our 2010 walk season. It's should be up on our website in 2 to 3 weeks. We are just finalizing our schedule. And just can I read the list?
You bet.
Okay. This year we have the Santa Cruz Island Backpack. We have Best Trails of Coastal Southern California, where you go to a variety of trails along the coastline there, and you camp overnight in the Malibu Nature Preserve. We have Marin Point Reyes Backpack and a Lost Coast Backpack up in Humboldt. We have the Humboldt Classic, which is one of the easier ones where we actually carry your stuff for you and cook for you. We have the new Trans Catalina Trail. This is actually a new trail on Catalina Island where you go from one side of Catalina all the way over to the other. And we're going to be one of the first groups that's hiking that entire
That sounds great.
Trail. We have one on Angel Island where you stay out in Angel Island for a few days.
Really? Yeah, I didn't know you could do that.
Well, you can't unless you're with a group.
That's great.
So you can stay with us, and we take you all around the trails on Angel Island. We have Mystery in the Moonlight, which is along the San Mateo coast, and we have some mystery writers who are going to be going along on the trip. We have one on the Monterey Bay Aquarium. Where you get to sleep overnight, which is great for kids.
The aquarium?
You sleep overnight in the aquarium. And we have another one where you sleep overnight in the San Francisco Zoo and then go for a hike on the coast the next day. We have the Marin Classic, which is just a regular coast walk where you go for several days and we cook for you, et cetera. And also another one in San Mateo that is a multi-day camping adventure where you stay in a lighthouse.
That sounds fabulous, even to this person here who doesn't camp. There's a couple there that could almost get me to break that rule. And so it's coastwalk.org.
Coastwalk.org.
And we've got just a couple of minutes more. So Laguna de Santa Rosa, to get involved. The docent training is coming up. There's lots of ways to get involved. Website is?
LagunaFoundation.org.
That's pretty easy, lagunafoundation.org. And do you do a newsletter? You do an e-newsletter, don't you?
We do an e-newsletter and then at least three times a year or quarterly, depending on what's going on, a printed newsletter that goes in the mail.
And you're an actual membership. People can join, right?
We're just becoming a membership organization, actually. That's a new initiative that we're doing. We haven't been, but February and March of this year, we're going to become a membership organization, and you can become a member.
That's great, and that's just a great way to support your environment, to support the things that make Sonoma County what Sonoma County is. So I really encourage you to take a look at the field guide to the Laguna de Santa Rosa. You know, even though the holidays are over, there's people's birthdays coming up. This is a great gift, and get to know your Laguna. Well, thanks both. This has been just fascinating for me.
It's been fun.
I love the coast, and I adore the Laguna and the coast both. So it's been informative and really a pleasure for me to have you here.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you very much for having us.
And good luck. People should always just try to stay informed politically. You've got Lynn Woolsey, who's a good source of information, and pay attention to what that governor is doing with the state park budget. He's trying to trick us. And meet me back here next week for another tasty episode of Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour. Have a great week.